Yo, 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 this is I'll Bleed Blue Forever. Listen to my man, Everything NYG's podcast. Yo, great show, man. Love listening. Keep it up. Keep doing what you're doing, man. Great show. Great listen. Love listening. Keep it up on the Giants, players, free agency, cap space, whoever. Listen to my man, Everything NYG's. Great show, bro. Keep it up.
All right, what's going on, everyone? Rob with Everything NYG here, back for episode 4. Today, I have a special guest with me from Pro Football Focus. It's senior writer Ben Lindsay. Ben, thank you for being here. How you doing, man?
Doing good, man. How are you?
I'm good. I'm hanging in there. I'm thankful you could be here and answer some questions. I know a lot of people, some fans, have a flawed opinion on PFF right now, especially with the Giants. And I personally have always been one that really endorses you guys and like your opinions. So I kind of want to ask you a few things and kind of see if it lines up with what I'm thinking and what everyone else thinks.
Yeah, let's
that
do
works
it.
For you. Okay, perfect. So to start it out, my first question with you, I kind of want to ask about just the Giants as a whole. So to your knowledge, based off the grading and just based off of in general, where do you think their biggest position of need is?
So I think a couple areas. Right now, edge rusher is a big one, especially they don't really have anyone proven with Marcus Golden hitting free agency. They have a pretty stacked interior defensive line with Tomlinson, Lawrence, and BJ Hill. All of those guys graded well, top 20 interior defenders by PFF grade, but they could use someone off the edge. And then just sticking with the defense, I think, I mean, linebacker, cornerback, they could really use help in a lot of spots back there.
Yeah, that's kind of what everyone's saying. We're saying the same thing is, you know, we have all these interior run stuffers. We have, as you said, based off your guys' grades and just, you know, football knowledge, our incredible interior D-line is there. You know what I mean? We just have nobody to rush the passer. Dexter.
And even with those guys, it's like all of them are run first, sort of, right?
Exactly. Thomas even Leonard Williams. Still.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, they're all run first. We have nobody to rush the passer. And I think that's been our biggest issue. And like you said, Marcus Golden's going to be hitting free agency. And based off of what I've told, I had whispers on it today. I'm trying to get it confirmed. But apparently a deal is in place for Leonard Williams with the Giants, but they don't want to do it until the start of free agency. Because if we do it when it opens, that pick with the Jets goes from a 4th to a 5th. So we'll see. But even then, he's not really a pass rusher, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Yeah, he's an adequate pass rusher, but even him, he's run first. He's a really good run stopper.
Exactly. Sort
of average to a little bit above average pass rusher.
Exactly. So that was my main thing with that D-line. I mean, I wanted to know, like I said, where your biggest position of need is, and it kind of aligns with me, and I know the rest of the Giants Nation feels the same way. I think D-line is our least priority outside of a pass rusher, but our linebackers and DBs are horrible, really bad. Yeah. So that's really all I want to know there. I wanted to know kind of how you align with me, but I think a big question that I continue to get and that I want to ask you personally, I don't know if you have grades or if whatever it may be, the offensive line, Dave Gettleman claimed how bad he wanted Hog Mollies on there, how much he wanted the O-line to improve. And I took the bait. It looked like it got a lot better to me. I mean, my main question is I want to know about Will Hernandez, Zeitler. Did anyone's grades get better throughout the year, especially Nate Solder, or did they all just get worse?
Yeah, so guys like Solder and Hernandez, their grades actually sort of trailed off at the end of the year.
Trailed off.
Got worse. Okay. Yeah, got worse as the year progressed. Hernandez especially, he was his rookie year was promising last year, but then 2019, his grade dropped to 58.6. 27th out of 39 qualifying left guards. And the big thing was run blocking. He sort of took a step back as a run blocker, grade-wise.
But Zeitler, I saw, man.
Oh. Yeah, yeah. It was rough. And it was sort of surprising. Zeitler graded well throughout the year. He ended the year with a 76.4 grade, 4th at right guard there. So he's always been one of the better pass-protecting guards in the league. Solid run blocker as well. So he's definitely the bright spot on that line.
Oh, yeah. Kind of from what I'm seeing based off of, you know, kind of how with how you guys grade and such, I'm kind of starting to see that anything above a 70 is pretty good, right? I'm assuming.
Yeah, on the area. Especially on the offensive line, interior offensive line, and their grades tend to be a little bit lower. So something like 76.4 is actually, I mean, you look at that and you're like, that's a C, right?
Right.
but that's not really the case. It's one of the better marks in the league.
Yeah, I mean, there's only a few guys in the league that are going to be in, like, the 90s or such, and I'm assuming, like, Quentin Nelson is one of them.
Yeah, Brooks. Yeah. Zach Martin. Those sort of guys that you think of at the top there.
Well, there, you know, on that front, and like I said, I kind of saw that with Will Hernandez, you know, at the beginning of the year, end of the year last year, going into this year, me amongst everyone else, I met him the Senior Bowl. And everyone really liked his rookie year, man. He played great. And then, like you said, he tailed off going into this year. I don't really know why. I mean, we got better pieces around him. And his run blocking was the thing he was very good at. And to say, yeah, to see that tailed off is concerning. I don't really know why. And Nate Solder as a whole is just, he's bad. He's really bad.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure.
It's also, there's also a level of, so last year was one of the worst years of his career. 64.7 grade. He finished 24th at left tackle. And I think part of it is just the contract, right? If you're comparing production to what you're paying them, it's always going to be disappointing.
Yeah, I mean, if you're saying he what'd you say, 29th out of what?
24th. Yeah.
24th. So there's 24 other left tackles in the league that are getting paid not even a fraction of what he's getting paid for that production. So, I mean, I've always kind of been the type that I would rather get a guy that's not proven and work for a contract instead of someone that's, you know, proven himself and getting paid like that. And I think that's a big piece of it, man. I feel like he's proven what he needed to prove, and now he's just keeping himself healthy. So,
yeah, for sure.
But, you know, on the other side of the offensive line at the right tackle spot, I know people would kill me if I didn't ask you this. I don't know if you guys have any, I know he didn't play a lot. If you don't, it's no big deal. But if you have any stats on Nick Gates, he played right tackle for us. He filled in and everyone really loved this guy. Now, keep in mind, our offensive line is horrible, so he stood out. But if you have any info on him, please let me know.
Yeah. So he ended the year 75.1 grade, which is pretty solid. But it was actually only 66.5 at right tackle. Since he played so few snaps that game he played at right guard against the Dolphins, that was his best game. It sort of bumped that up. But still, I mean, that's still a solid mark for a guy with low expectations coming in.
Yeah, because, I mean, as far as I know, based off of, you know, I recently, I might be working with you. I've been accepted into PFF, and I'm working with them. I'm learning the system and trying to understand it more. As far as I know, based off of game in and game out, you guys do like a +3, -2, basically, in your grading, something like that, right?
And then they add so up. It's like the grading scale is basically works. You look at it play by play, and a player can get anywhere from -2 to +2, right? So if the right guard comes around, gets a reach block, that would be like a +1. A difficult block that they aren't really expected to do, they move the defender out of the hole. Things like that. And those add up to a +/- grade for the game. And then that gets normalized to the 0 to 100 scale.
Okay. Gotcha. And then those basically add up every week, you know, for better or for worse.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Okay. Well, I mean, like I said, I'm happy to hear about Nick Gates. I mean, there's a lot of people, you know, my main target in free agency is going to be Jack Conklin. That's just, I mean, I know you guys have him graded well throughout his career. Just in general, I mean, he's one of the better tackles in the league, and there's a lot of guys that prefer to start Nick Gates over going after him, and I don't think that's justifiable, but I mean, to see that he graded well at guard, if shit really hits the fan, we can throw him in there, and it's nice to know he can play tackle too decently.
Yeah, so sure. Rotational piece definitely look good.
It's valuable, you know what I mean, especially because we have no center. And I think my last question, as far as the offensive line, we have a guy by the name of John Jalapio. He was our center. Yeah. He played and then he went out. He played and he went out. How is he? I know last year he graded better. I know you're not going to have a lot on him this year. Has he always kind of been a middle of the pack kind of guy, or has he had years where he stood out?
So last year it was pretty rough. He ended the year with a 56.3 grade, which was 34th out of 37 qualifying centers. So not great. You're definitely looking to upgrade there.
Wow.
Over the course of his career, looking at it right now, his best year came, I mean, 2018, he only played 116 snaps, but he graded out pretty well. I think just in general, you're probably looking to upgrade at center.
Yeah, as a whole. And I saw Graham Glasgow sitting there. So that's the best option in free agency.
Connor McGovern also makes a little bit of sense. Broncos dinner.
Yeah, I don't know what type of deal he's going to get. How old is he? He's like 27, 28, right? Or is he older than that?
No, that sounds about right. I'm not sure exactly, but somewhere in that range. He really struggled at the beginning of his career. He moved to center. Last year was his first year full-time starter at center, and they got Mike Munchak in there, one of the better offensive line coaches in the league, and he sort of had a career year, buoyed himself up. So could be a good option.
Yeah, that's what I you know, honestly, the center position is kind of weird this year, but those are the two names to look at. Dave Gettleman's more of a guy that he likes to go and draft him instead of sign him. So it wouldn't surprise me if we didn't even make a call on Conklin, but we should. I mean, I'll leave you alone on the offensive line now. As we can tell, it's really bad. It's very up and down. We have nobody there except for Zeitler.
You got Zeitler, though.
Yeah, and we have Zeitler. Thank God. That was a great trade. This is more of a personal opinion question. You can factor in the grades or kind of whatever you're feeling, but this is another one that a lot of the fans on Instagram, on Twitter, wanted me to ask you. Evan Engram, he's going to be going into his fifth year of his contract, basically on his you know, make or break year, because he was a first round pick. We had the option on him. I know he hasn't been able to run block his entire career. I mean, he's not a tight end, in my opinion. He's a wide receiver, a glorified wide receiver, if you will. So, I mean, if on the outside looking in, as far as grading a player or as far as just in general with your experience, do you think he deems a value of a contract extension? I mean, do you think he fits that mold? Because Caden Smith played great. So what do you think?
Yeah, I think it's a tough question, right? Because he's different for a tight end. He's explosive in the way that few tight ends are, has the sort of speed that not a lot of tight ends have. And at the tail end of that 2018 season, he was grading out and playing like one of the better tight ends in the league. But at some point, you do have to be concerned about the injuries.
They're starting
to pile up. And it's tough to rely on someone who can't stay healthy. So
yeah, he's made out of glass, man. It's been really bad.
I think with like the sort of depth they have at wide receiver, it wouldn't be a top priority to extend them. But it all depends on the price point and what he looks like this year, if he can stay healthy.
Yeah, it's a make or break year for him. I think the problem with him, if I had to pick something, would be, you know, we play him at the tight end spot, obviously. And, you know, with that spot, you're basically an extra offensive lineman. And I don't think his durability is there to be that. He's a very awkward player, very awkward, because he's a wide receiver, but he blocks really bad. So I don't know with him. If I had to pick, I mean, I would extend him. But I know nobody's going to agree with that. Most Giants fans want him gone for like a third round pick, which I think is way far off. I mean, he might be made of glass and he might not be the best in the world, but I mean, his production's there when he's healthy.
Yeah, he's still talented. He's talented.
Incredibly talented. Yeah. And I mean, he's definitely a captain on this team too. The players love him. The fans, for the most part, love him. I mean, on Twitter, especially in the Giants sector, man, they're rough over there, but, I think he's worth it. Now, this guy, we traded back up in the first round for him. We took him with the first to last pick in the first round. It was our third pick in the first round. We kind of went all out, and he had a horrible start to the year. I mean, I, for one, amongst millions of other Giants fans, already counted this guy out. We wanted nothing to do with him, and that's DeAndre Baker. He had an amazing second half, though. From what I've seen and what I've been told, even especially through you guys, he was one of the top-ranked corners in the NFL in the second half of the season. Is that true, and kind of what improved with him?
Yeah, so, I mean, he did – the start to the year for Baker was – it was brutal, just allowing play after play. I went back and watched a little bit of him recently, just stumbling, trying to get on receivers, cutting in, letting guys over the top of him. But he did pick that up later in the year. After week 12 to the end of the regular season, he was our 12th highest graded cornerback in the entire league.
Wow.
Really picked up the sort of getting his hand on balls, forcing incompletions. His forced incompletion rate more than doubled over the second half of the season.
Wow.
And that's sort of the play that we expected from him.
Yeah, out of college.
Getting him at 30, he was our – I think he was 16th or somewhere in that range on our big board going into the draft. So getting him at 30, we saw as a value. And sometimes it just takes time for cornerbacks coming into the league. Not always easy to assimilate in there right away. And you have to be excited about what he did at the end of the year.
Oh, of course. I mean, you know, to be not only was it, you know, still in his first year, it was, it shows that he took it kind of like how I view Kirk Cousins. He took the negativity and he turned it into something. And like you said, I mean, I know going in, I was so excited to get him because when we got him out of the draft, I mean, again, I use you guys a lot per your guys' stats. He was one of like that. I think he was number three on the highest graded you guys since your grading era in college for incompletion rate, which is amazing. He was like number three at like 94 point something.
Yeah, he was great at Georgia.
Which is, I mean, you know, you got to consider, like you said, it's the value pick. But other than that, man, our corners, it's another issue. I mean, Janoris Jenkins, I never liked him. I was happy to see him make his own mistake. And, you know, we had kind of a reason to let him go. But outside of that, Sam Beal, I know you'll have no info on him. He doesn't play. Corey Valentine, you know, he played a little bit. And when he did play, he played horrible. Julian Love, that's a guy I wanted to ask you about, though. How, I know we had him at corner, we had him at safety, he had some great games, he had some bad ones. Where was he in the pack, just in general, if you have any info on him?
Yeah, he graded out pretty well, actually. He was in the low 70s, somewhere in that range.
Wow.
Okay. So he sort of played a mix of, like, box, safety, slot, corner, just all over the field. And he played well enough to sort of want to see more of him next year in that role. He was another guy that we were high on when they took him. I mean, was it the third round? Something like that.
Yeah, we took him in the third round. Yeah.
Yeah. He graded out for us pretty well at Notre Dame. So it's another guy. Him and Baker are the two sort of – and Peppers are sort of the pieces – that you want to build around on the secondary, but the rest of the guys, there's not a whole lot to work with.
Yeah. Peppers, I know, had a really bad year considering what he's done over the last few. I know he did not grade well. He didn't play well. He had injury issues as a whole. I know he was bad. But I mean, that's the Giants' depth at corner. I mean, cause Julian Love isn't even, we consider him on the depth chart a free safety right now. So if you look at our depth, what we really have is Grant Haley on the practice squad, Corey Ballantyne, Julian Love, I guess, DeAndre Baker, and Sam Beal. That's all we have, literally. And so you got to consider, I mean, everyone's jumping on Byron Jones. See, me personally, if I had to pick one corner from free agency, I'm taking Mike Hilton from the Steelers.
Okay.
But I don't know. I mean, I don't know if you guys are as high as everyone else is on Byron Jones. I just feel like he's not worth what he's going to get paid.
I mean, we are high on Byron Jones. He's one of our top free agents available this offseason. A lot of people like to point at the interceptions, right? He hasn't intercepted a pass the last 2 years.
Right.
But he's been around the ball, doesn't give up much production-wise, still forces incompletions, pass breakups, things like that.
Right.
I think it's one of those things where you have to decide whether you want to sort of add a couple depth guys or a couple guys who can impact the game, or go out and pay a bunch of money for Jones.
Yeah, and I agree, you know, but like I said, for me, I feel like, you know, it's becoming more valuable in the league, and don't get me wrong, cornerback ones are, you know, the epitome of value at that spot, but I think slot corners are so underrated. I think that they do so much more than what people think, and Mike Hilton, in my opinion, last year it was Bryce Callahan. He got 4 years, 36. I think Mike Hilton will get about the same. Just such underrated players. I mean, they do everything from, you know, having to line up with somebody like Evan Engram to going with their wide receiver three, whoever that may be. You know, in our case, in an ideal world, it was Darius Slayton originally.
It's not even always wide receiver threes, right? I mean, so you're seeing a lot more top guys go into the slot. Chris Godwin plays a lot in the slot. Keenan Allen, Tyreek Hill. So having guys who can shut down those kinds of players inside is big.
It's so valuable. And that's, you know, I think teams are catching on to it, like we were just saying, where, you know, if you have your top wide receiver against your top corner, obviously if there's a way to exploit that, move them over to slot. And I think more teams are going to start doing that, which calls for more slot corners.
Yeah.
1,000%. But I mean, that's another thing that, like I said, just like the O-line, it's bad. It's real bad. We gave everyone a little bit of optimism towards what's there, but, you know, take it with a grain of salt. It's not good. But what is good, and I know you personally don't follow me on Twitter. I have a bunch of guys at PFF that do, and they've always agreed with me since the start on this. And I'll give you a little bit of background on me. Everyone that listens to this knows this. Daniel Jones going into the draft, the biggest amount of work I do is quarterback scouting. I used to play quarterback. That's what I do. I love it. And I've been, you know, pat myself on the back pretty decent with the quarterback reviews and stuff like that. I love the Daniel Jones going into the draft. Giants fans hated the pick. Giants fans didn't like the player when he became an option. I was at his first ever start in Tampa Bay, and that was amazing. Daniel Jones, outside of the fumble problems, if there's one thing that I would like a player to have an issue with, is something like a fumble issue. Outside of that, he damn near almost broke the passing record. He didn't play three games. Where did he grade best, and where was he worse? You know, because he, in my opinion, looked amazing throughout the entire year outside of a few errors. So what's your take on him?
Yeah, my take is basically that, so what he does well, he can make those big night downfield accurate throws. He was 15th in big time throw rate among quarterbacks last year, which for a rookie, that's pretty good. He graded out pretty well under pressure. So that's sort of, he was used to that at Duke, right? He didn't have a great.
Oh, heck, great. No. He had McDonald's linemen. Yeah, yeah. McDonald's receivers.
So coming in, that sort of helped him out. And he played well in those situations this year. Graded out pretty well under pressure. Could make the big throws. The area that I think he needs to improve on the most is just the turnover-worthy plays.
Right.
So we basically chart not just actual interceptions and fumbles that you lost, but just fumbles that you're responsible for, passes that you throw that are either dropped interceptions or a defender's in position to make the play. They don't. And we consider those turnover-worthy plays. And he had the third highest turnover-worthy play rate in the league last year.
Wow.
If you look at, like, touchdown to interception ratio, it was pretty solid. But what that doesn't take into account, yeah, it doesn't take into account the fumbles. He had 9 dropped interceptions, which was one of the higher marks in the league. So I think there's reason to be excited about Daniel Jones, just based on the high end plays you see on his tape. But he has to clean up the opportunities that he gives the defenses.
I agree. Yeah. You know, with me, like I said, I love Daniel Jones for who he is as a person. He's like Eli Manning part two, which, you know, I had my conflicting opinions on Eli going forward, but he just is a better, I always wanted a guy that was mobile, and people, you know, a lot of people didn't realize going into the draft that this guy ran like a 4.55, 4.6, which is pretty damn fast for a quarterback.
Yeah,
and, you know,
he can move.
Sleeping on that. Yeah. I mean, and people were sleeping on that. I mean, we won the Tampa game, his first ever start, because of a scramble. And that's my thing is, you know, if he can clean up that ball security, the sky's the limit for Daniel Jones. You know, he got sacked a lot, and I don't credit that to being his fault. A lot of that's our O-line, obviously. But, you know, he just needs to be better at tucking the ball when he gets hit. And outside of that, I mean, keep doing what you're doing, kid. Like, you know, I don't see a problem with him, and I'm excited for the future. And I'm glad to see, you know, as a whole, that I think he graded well with y'all. I don't know what you finished him out as. I don't know if you grade quarterbacks.
Yeah, he was, I think he ended the year 24th, somewhere in there.
Okay. Yeah.
Not the bottom of the barrel, yeah.
No, not at all.
Not the very low end.
No, and you consider the guys in the league that he's ahead of, you know, take that into account.
Yeah.
I mean, on the same front, something that I meant to write his name down. Somebody sent this in to me last minute. I thought it was a good question. It's kind of something I was always concerned about. Still sticking to Daniel Jones. So this is where the opinion gets flawed with Pro Football Focus, and where I still understand how it happens, a lot of people don't. So we had a game against Green Bay where he threw a touchdown and 3 picks. It was a horrible game. A few weeks later, he played Dwayne Haskins and the Redskins, threw 5 touchdowns, no picks, and was damn near perfect. But the Green Bay game was graded higher. Why does that happen like that? What goes on there?
So I think it's easy when you're watching a game or just looking at the box score to key in on those, like the big numbers, the touchdowns, the interceptions. If you're watching a game, just focus on that one big throw that he made that's getting shown on the highlight reels. But what goes into the grade is basically every throw, every single play where he does something that warrants a grade, all taken into account. So if he overthrows a guy, goes out of bounds, but the guy was open. It's not, you might not pay attention to that a whole lot if you're just watching the game as a fan. Sort of goes to the back of the mind, but it's something that comes up in the grid.
Gotcha.
And those sorts of things start to add up. So that's why it doesn't always align perfectly with the box score or things like that.
That makes sense. Yeah, because I remember when I used to be the biggest Odell Beckham truther in the world. I loved the guy. Obviously, my opinions are shot now, as you know, with the rest of the league for the most part, just like Antonio Brown. But that would always really throw me for a loop. I mean, there'd be games where, I mean, he would be like 8 catches, 200 yards, 2 touchdowns, and he'd have like a 54 grade. And I remember that was before I was kind of educated on it, and I would just snap on Pro Football Focus. And I was like, what is this? Like, you know, and I guess there's a lot more that goes into it, and especially,
it's
you know,
not, like I said, it's also not all stats are created equal. So if you dump 100%. The ball off on a screen, the receiver does all the work. It could show up as a 70-yard touchdown. It was a routine throw for the quarterback. So
right. Yeah, and that's kind of, like I said, what I'm learning and why I really wanted to have you on here was to kind of beat that flawed opinion, because I respect the hell out of what you guys do. And like I said, I'm thankful to have an opportunity to do it. And I'm really seeing why these grades pop out the way they do. It's just, you know, you don't catch it as well as, you know, somebody that's working for it does. So I have 2 more quick ones for you. This one isn't too much of a question. It's just kind of what you think again. Sterling Shepard and Darius Slayton. Darius Slayton was the 5th-round pick that blew up the world. He was amazing for us in his first year. Sterling Shepard has always been known to run block really well. Darius Slayton, on the other hand, doesn't. As a whole, where do you think they fit? Because I know Darius Slayton had a very big number in it. I'm trying to think of the exact name. Deep balls or catchable balls or something like that. You guys grade his number was really high for deep balls. And Sterling's better for the hard to catch balls. I'm trying to say it right, but you know what I mean.
Contested
catch. That's what I'm trying to say. So I mean, do you think that fits accurately with them? You know, like Shepard is more the dog in the inside and Slayton's the deep threat.
Yeah, for sure. Slayton had a lot of success deep last year. Catching balls downfield. Slayton's more the sort of, he plays in the slot occasionally. He played a little bit less last year with Golden Tate, but he still played in the slot, sort of over the middle, contested balls, that sort of thing. I think both guys are ideally complementary receivers. Yeah. I think the Giants are still sort of missing that true top number one receiver since they traded away Odell.
Yeah, that's what I just said. Yep, that's what I just said on a podcast yesterday. We don't have a number one. Exactly. I'm glad you said that.
But I think both of them are solid pieces to have, for sure.
Yeah, and I mean, they're both very young. Sterling Shepard has signed a 4-year deal, technically 5, now back down to 4. And Slayton's on his rookie deal. So I think they're both very good pieces to have. Now, this is kind of – it's going to circle back into this question. It's going to be a 2-part, and then I'm going to let you get out of here. So with that being said, this draft is one of the best wide receiver drafts of all time. Hands down, it's not close. It's an amazing draft.
Yeah.
And, you know – that's not our biggest need. We're in the wide receiver class for free agency isn't very good. It's kind of, it's up in the air, but the draft is amazing. That's not our biggest need. So, I mean, do you think the Giants should do the obvious pick? I mean, my guy and everyone else's guy is Isaiah Simmons. And if we weren't going to do that, you know, where do you think we go and why, you know what I mean? Cause who's your favorite player in the draft for the Giants, and who's, just out of curiosity, your favorite offensive lineman?
Yeah, so I mean, Simmons at 4 would make a lot of sense. He could come in. They have needs at edge, linebacker, slot, safety. He played all of those positions at Clemson. He played them well. So him coming in and sort of doing it all on the defense, I mean, it makes sense at 4. I think if they don't do that, it might make sense to trade back. Just because there's a lot of high-end talent in this draft. You can be getting guys at 10 that would be going top 5 in a lot of drafts. And if they do that, they could go after wide receiver, Jerry Jeudy, CeeDee Lamb, even Henry Ruggs is a guy Ruggs. That I really like. He's got a lot of juice. And he's not just a deep threat. He's a really good route runner. He has good hands. So I think any of those could be targets. Cornerback, if they want to do if Okuda's on the board, that wouldn't be a bad pick at all. So I think they have some options. As far as tackle.
It's stacked. Yeah, it's stacked.
Yeah, it's stacked. For tackle, I like Wills. If they're going tackle early. He's a guy who's a freak athlete. I mean, I know people lost their minds over Wirfs, and rightfully so. But Wills put up some ridiculous numbers at the combine as well. He's just so explosive, fluid. Could fill in at right tackle where he played at Alabama. I think that would be a solid pick.
Yeah, Andrew Thomas seems to fall. He seemed like he fell off a little bit. I mean, he was like the projected number five overall, you know, somewhere in that realm. And
yeah.
I'm not really hearing his name anymore. I've heard more about Wirfs, and then I'm gonna butcher his last name. I'm just gonna say the lineman from Louisville, Beckton. Yeah, whatever it is.
The mountain.
Yeah, he scares me though, man. I mean, I feel like he's gonna be so sloppy in the league, just like Eric Flowers, because he's so damn lengthy and fast. He's just gonna flop all over the field.
We actually have on our big board, the order is Thomas, Wills, Wirfs, and then I think Becton's four. Unless I'm missing someone, but so Thomas is actually our top tackle still.
He is. Okay. I figured because I just haven't heard his name anymore. I've only heard Wirfs, Becton. That's all I'm hearing now. And I was wondering kind of what happened to him. I didn't know if he just didn't perform well or what. He's not that.
Yeah, he came in as a freshman in the SEC and was like pass protecting well already, which is not an easy thing to do. Last year he was our top graded Power Five tackle in college football. So he didn't really go anywhere. He's just sort of getting less buzz because he didn't do ridiculous things at the combine.
Yeah, the combine's hit or miss. Just like Claypool is going to shoot up the, the boards and everything. And it really depends. It all depends on what they do on draft day. Look at last year, DK Metcalf. Everyone, oh my God, top five pick. Look at the combine. He went the third round, late second.
Yeah, yeah.
So it'll be interesting. But I mean, like I said, I know I've kept you for long enough. I mean, the questions you broke down for me, not only did it help me out, I hope it helps everyone that listens to this. And kind of helps your opinion a little bit on PFF, man. They're definitely valuable. They're definitely very useful to use, as you can tell. And like I said, Ben, thank you so much for coming on here and answering some of these questions. I know this isn't your favorite team. So the work you did answering these questions means the world. And like I said, I hope to have you on here again soon, and I hope to be working with you soon as well.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me on, man.
No problem. Well, go Giants. I know you don't like that. Go Giants. And like I said, thank you for being here. Everyone, thank you for listening, and I will talk to you guys on episode 5 on the next one. Peace.